Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to the Goddard Report. Comments made on the Goddard Report and TalkDigitalNetwork.com are an expression of opinion only. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Dr. Stephen Malthouse, president of the Canadian Health Alliance, online at CanadaHealthAlliance.org. He's speaking to us from the road in Alberta. Stephen, welcome back to the Goddard Report.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. It's nice to be here.
Let's get right into it. BC's Bill 36. What is it and why should people care?
Whoa, well, that's actually a pretty big topic and a hot topic nowadays. This was a bill which is called the Health Professions and Occupations Act. It's intended to replace what we currently have. And what it does, it does a number of different things, and none of them are good. Presented to be legislated by the Health Minister, Adrian Dick, and probably they'll vote on it next week. But what it does is it increases the oversight of the government for all the healthcare professions. That includes doctors and just about everything, you know, chiropractors, naturopaths, and so forth. But what it does is a number of things. One is it takes the SALT regulation out of it and puts the government in place to control the licensing and regulation of the different health professions. And that would mean that instead of what we have today, which is we have a advisory board at the College of Physicians and Surgeons, which is 60% of it is made up by physicians, doctors who have experience in practicing medicine. It will be made up by appointees from Adrian Dick and his office in the government. So that means that we're going to have people that are unqualified to regulate the medical profession, not just the doctors, but also all these other professions. They're going to, in fact, try to take 24 healthcare licensing bodies and distill them down to 6. And it's being done under the guise of streamlining and simplifying the process of healthcare. Well, of course, we know what the government does. Generally, they do not streamline anything. But whatever they get their fingers on, they actually make it much, much worse and more complicated, more bureaucracy. And in this case, now they have no expertise, and yet they're trying to step in and control the medical profession. It is a power grab. There's no doubt about it.
Bill 36 has punishing penalties for wrong speak, something right out of a George Orwell novel. Wrong speak by doctors and other healthcare professionals. Why would the BC government need to muzzle doctors and other healthcare professionals?
Well, this has got a lot to do with what's happened the last 2 to 3 years with regard to the COVID pandemic, and that, you know, doctors have spoken out against the way the government has managed it and our public health, and I'm one of those doctors, and we've seen that everywhere they step wrongly, and it's caused a lot of suffering in the province of British Columbia. You know, there's almost a million people in British Columbia who cannot find the family doctor, and they're closing in emergency departments. Hospitals are not overrun necessarily by people that are sick, but they're understaffed, which gives the appearance of them being overrun. They're understaffed. People are, healthcare professionals are quitting. They're retiring early because the stress is so great. I mean, everything that the government has done in the last 2 years has actually been caused more harm to the general population. And it seems remarkable that they wouldn't recognize that because it's been going on for such a period of time. There have been calls in the legislature for, you know, Adrian Dix, the health minister, to retire. But just let me give you an example. With this new legislation, if someone comes and makes a complaint against a healthcare practitioner, whether it's a doctor, chiropractor, whatever, you know, they have no liability themselves. In other words, they have an immunity if they just rake one of these professionals over the coals. Now, many people may say, hey, you know, we need to call these doctors onto the carpet anyway, who didn't protect us against the COVID-19 shot, and tell us that they were ineffective and potentially dangerous, particularly for children. And but nevertheless, this means that there's indemnity to anyone who makes complaints. Now, that's going to make things much more complicated when they try to regulate the professionals. But, you know, if doctors speak out and say something which is against the state policy, they are liable to a $200,000 fine per incident and jail time. So that means that, you know, doctors will not speak out. It's very similar to the bill they just passed down in California, where doctors have to say exactly what they're told by the government. And if they speak out, because they see a couple of reasons. One is that government is wrong, and secondly, because they're actually individualizing their treatment for their patients, who they know and the government does not know, then, you know, they have potentially can lose their license. That's what's on in California right now, and that's exactly what they're trying to do here, except for they're upping the ante. They're increasing the fine $200,000 up to that amount, and putting you in jail. Not just your loss of your license. So this is an incredibly draconian measure, which will mean that all sorts of healthcare practitioners, particularly doctors, will be leaving the province because of that too big a sword to be working under. And essentially you become an agent of the state. You're no longer a practicing physician who can determine what is best for the patient.
Doctors are speaking up right now in BC about the government forcing diabetic medications on patients, and the doctors feel those aren't the right medications. But you have to use the cheap ones first, have some kind of adverse reaction to it, and then go on to the newer drugs that are more effective. Would they be allowed to speak out about things like that under this new legislation?
Well, we don't know what they would be allowed to do because the small details have not been laid out. This is a broad stroke legislation that we'll fill in the details later, which would raise red flags for everybody because that means that, you know, once the legislation is in place, in the back rooms of government, they can do whatever they want pretty much. And so making doctors follow guidelines which are not based on sound medical practice is very likely to happen. And that would be a good example, that doctors would be forced to use the cheaper drugs, maybe 5-6 of them, before they're able to give you the drug which we've known from day one was the right one for that particular person. So yeah, that's the danger. There's so many in there. You know, when you have people who, you know, Adrian Dix, when you have people who don't know anything about medicine controlling the boat, then you're bound to be on rocky shores pretty soon. Adrian Dix, you know, he is not qualified. I mean, he has an undergraduate degree in history and political science, and he knows nothing about medicine. How he got appointed there and what he's done in the last 2 to 3 years shows that he's completely incompetent for regulating or even passing legislation like this.
Adrian's a type 1 diabetic. You'd think he'd be a little more sympathetic for people who want the right diabetes medication.
Yeah, you would hope so, but obviously that's not the case.
What about your constitutional right to free speech?
Well, I think when doctors speak out, I'll just speak from a medical doctor's perspective, because I am an MD, is that, you know, when doctors speak out, I mean, generally they're wearing their doctor's hat 24/7, and so they can be, you know, chased by regulatory bodies if you're talking out, even if you're, you know, it's in the grocery store. So you can't really get out of it because, you know, you're speaking outside. But we do have the right to free speech in our Constitution. And but there's a big issue about that. I think in the last 2 or 3 years we've seen that the government and the colleges themselves have trampled all over our rights as citizens of Canada and our human rights.
Medical tyranny taking political control of the medical system, has this been tried before?
Oh, yes, it has. Sure. And I think there are a lot of similarities to what happened before World War II, where they actually made everyone toe the line there. And, you know, it was a tremendous amount of propaganda. And we're seeing that right now. I mean, people watch TV. All you have to do is watch CBC, CBC, those, any of the mainstream channels, and you can see the propaganda is amazing. But also the way that they're emotionally confusing people. We'll see, you know, stories about stabbings, then we'll have a little picture of a little baby enjoying the snowfall. You know, the things that people are on an emotional roller coaster, and I think that makes the general makes people unsettled. So we're seeing that in general population, but also even among our doctors. You know, we'll be following what are known as guidelines, and we will not be able to go off those guidelines. And those guidelines, you know, not meant to be applied to the individual patient sitting in front of you. They are guidelines. They're not rules or laws. And this Health Professions Act, Bill 36, will completely undermine that. Healthcare has already deteriorated tremendously in the last 2 to 3 years in our province. I'm sure you've noticed that. People can't get emergency department, ambulance wait lines are enormous. You know, people can sit at home with a broken arm waiting for the ambulance to come, and they can wait for a couple hours. But in the meantime, ambulances are sitting empty in places because there's no personnel to man them. What's happened, we've had healthcare and BC driven right into the ground here by Adrian Dix and his team, and we can't expect that them coming out with a new oversight where they grab all the power to regulate is going to make things any better.
So under this legislation, if a doctor or a nurse says conditions are horrible in my hospital or nursing home, they wouldn't be allowed to talk about it?
No, they potentially said, shut up or we're going to fine you. And, I mean, already now, you know, the colleges have not done a good job. Their main job, you know, is to protect the public. That's it. And they've done quite the opposite in the college physicians and surgeons. They've actually come out saying that any doctor who speaks against public health can be investigated and punished, and that they're not following ethics. But in fact, it's the other way around, that an ethical doctor will identify an error that's being incurred from the top down and will speak out about it in the attempt to try to change it. But doctors have been gagged in our province, and that's why many of them, although they don't believe in what's going on in terms of forcing COVID-19 shots and masking and social distancing, all of which have been proven to be ineffective in treating or preventing COVID-19, those doctors have been gagged and told that if you speak out, you will lose your license, at least be investigated and potentially fined. That's already in the works. But now we're handing over the reins not just to what we consider to be an incompetent college of state physicians and surgeons, but now we're handing it over to an incredibly incompetent government organization, the Ministry of Health.
Is medical tyranny being pushed in other jurisdictions? I think you mentioned California.
Well, I think, yeah, California is a good example of that, but everywhere across country it's being pushed. Probably the only place we're seeing a little glimmer of light would be in Alberta, where the premier there, Danielle Smith, has fired the chief public health officer and is attempting to at least make amends for what's happened over the last 2 to 3 years. But in the rest of Canada, we see this in Ontario. I don't know if they're as bad as BC, but they're right up there, neck and neck, in terms of the way that they're trying to control doctors so they don't speak out. And, you know, that's the first thing we see, that type of censorship, is the sort of tyranny, right? You have to burn the books and gag all the people and bump off all the professionals so that you don't have anyone opposing, the government. And people should recognize that. I'm sure that those people that come from Eastern Bloc countries, have seen this before. In fact, they were some of the first to say, hey, wait a minute, when these things started rolling out in 2020.
Could Bill 36 be part of the engineered breakdown of society?
That's a good question. It's hard to know what's in the thoughts of these people, the politicians. A lot of them just like to have power and to be voted back in so they can continue with their power. But I don't know whether they see us as cattle or what. But I think whether it's engineered or not, I'm not sure. But it certainly looks that way because it's the persistence in driving some of their policies that come out of the ministry just do not make sense. They're absurd at this point. And I'm speaking about COVID-19 boosters and giving shots to six-month-old infants when they don't need it. It's risky and it has no benefit. You know, when you see those sort of policies being pushed again and again and again, despite the evidence, which is so clear now, perhaps back in 2020 you could have an excuse you didn't know, but now the evidence, the research is so obvious that you can't but think that there's some attempt here to destroy the healthcare profession, healthcare in our province. And of course, you know, this term Build Back Better, which we've heard from the WEF and all sorts of leaders, including our own, our Prime Minister, around the world we've heard this, Build Back Better. To build back better, you have to destroy first. I think that is on the agenda. That's the only way you can explain what's been happening.
Again, do you feel Bill 36 is likely against the Charter of Rights and the Canadian Bill of Rights, where you have a right to protect yourself from harm or believed harm, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it does two things. One, it sort of it bypasses informed consent. That means that patients will not be informed of the dangers and benefits of a particular therapy and the alternative. And they have to be also determined that they are capable of making decisions. Those are important things. Informed consent is essential. It's the backbone of medicine or medical sort. And you bypass that if you have doctors who are not allowed to tell you what's the bad side, what's the downside of a therapy that the government is recommending. So, and you're not even allowed to talk about alternatives. So if that's the case, informed consent just goes out the window. And that's kind of the essential, the backbone of medical care. Without that, we're ethically a law.
Well, isn't there an international law, the Nuremberg law, concerning where the Nazis used concentration camp inmates for medical experiments, obviously without their consent? Isn't that what we're trying to prevent in the first place?
Well, of course. I mean, the Nuremberg Code came out saying that informed consent was essential. And if people may not know this, but we are still in an experimental phase of the COVID-19 jab. We're in a phase 3 trial that people, you know, normally with a trial, it's usually preceded by animal trials, which this was not done. And also people have to give informed consent to be part of an experiment. And people are not doing that. And when you say informed consent, it has to be significant. You have to, you can't just say, hey, this is safe and effective, sign here, and here's the shot. You actually have to give them the details. And if you've looked at some of these pharmacies, when they open up the pamphlet, the instruction pamphlet, which are inside the boxes of these COVID-19 shots, they're blank, and they have written on them the words intentionally blank. So even the pharmacists, and I know this from having spoken to pharmacists, they don't know what the side effects of these COVID shots are. And, you know, the Pfizer was forced by a court ruling to present their adverse event findings in the first couple of months after the shots were rolled out. And this contained 9 pages, typewritten pages, where there were no spaces on the page. It was so tightly printed. 9 pages of adverse events, including just about every disease you can imagine. It was like reading a medical dictionary. So informed consent, you know, is not possible unless people know they're an experiment and they're, and they want to have informed consent. They want to give it. And secondly, that it can be informed properly. And we're seeing that not only have that not happened the last 2.5 years, or at least since the shots have been rolled out, but it is not going to happen definitely if this Bill 36 is passed. It will completely bypass informed consent.
What can the people of BC do to stop Bill 36?
Well, you need to write to your MLA. I've sent things out to the MLAs, all of them in the province, telling them what my concerns are as a medical doctor, and people have to do that. They have to speak up. They have to call their MLA's office, and they really have to shout, to speak loudly. If you just don't pay attention to what's happening with your government nowadays, you're just going to be trampled in the dirt, and you will have no rights and freedoms when the dust settles. So you have to speak out. You have to call your MLA, and you have to do it in large numbers of people.
Now, I know under the vaccine mandates, when people had to get vaccinated or lose their jobs, one fellow was allergic to it. He'd already had an allergic reaction to the shot. But so for his second shot, because he didn't want to lose his job, he went to the hospital so they could deal with anaphylactic shock after he got the shot. Now, is that something horrible that people shouldn't have to go through?
Absolutely. Well, anaphylaxis can kill people.
Yes.
You have to balance. What is the risk? We have anaphylaxis on one hand, and then we have what are the benefits of the COVID-19 shot on the other hand. And so that would depend upon age, that's true. But, you know, in fact, now that we look at the research, that although people may, in the older age brackets, have a slightly a brief benefit in terms of protection from COVID, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, but not other viruses, it may give you some brief benefit. But even that is doubtful. But definitely we're seeing a negative effect after those first couple of weeks. That means that people are actually more susceptible to infection and so forth. So if we look at that, we see that there, and also other risk factors as well have to be taken into account. So when you do an equation with all that, balancing on one hand the risk of anaphylaxis, which could kill you, it's very dangerous. That's why they're doing it in the hospital and they're having physicians standing by with adrenaline and resuscitation equipment. And on the other hand, minimal, if any, benefit from the COVID-19 shot. You have to wonder why, how could you make a decision like that and put the person in the hospital and force them to take it? That's the whole issue of exemption. You know, an exemption should be something you have to acquire. If you say, I don't want it, you should be exempt in an experiment like this. And now the evidence really shows that these COVID-19 shots are not good for anyone in any age group. In fact, what they're causing adverse effect-wise in terms of myocarditis, pericarditis, blood clot, increased cancer rate, and severity of cancer, it shows that these should never have been rolled out. They were not properly investigated prior to the rollout. So, I mean, some people still think they can go and get their fifth booster, you know, and they're going to get enough to use up all the stockpiles. Our prime minister, you know, bought about nine of these per person in the population. And, you know, they're going to keep going giving you booster after booster because they don't work. And yet they have, they've spent a lot of money and, they have stockpiles. And, you know, in my opinion, they're in cahoots with the pharmaceutical companies, you know, to help their buddies make money. People are getting rich while the general population is getting poor and is being put at risk, from these shocks.
Died Suddenly, a documentary released this week, is a devastating look at the experimental injections that have been pushed by the BC government. Do you think any of the MLAs that will vote on Bill 36 have watched or will watch Died Suddenly?
Well, it's just come out in the last couple of days, this film, and it's pretty horrific. It shows what the embalmers are pulling out of people's, when they're embalming corpses, they're pulling out these long, stringy, fibrous, and elastic material, some of them 3 feet long, and these are being only coming out of those people that have the COVID-19 shots and so on. And we know that, you know, 50% of people who die from the COVID shot die within the first 48 hours. And so it's pretty clear, you know, what people died of, except for our public health and other government agencies are denying that these things are not safe and not effective. So, I mean, I don't know where they have that illusion from, but they're pushing it. But yeah, Died Suddenly. I doubt they'll watch it, to tell you the truth. In fact, I wouldn't recommend, definitely it's not something for children. It's really quite gory, and, I mean, it's the truth. I mean, it's what it looks like. And, but, you know, people would be very shocked if they saw that. There's another film which is very useful, which is called Uninformed Consent. And that can be through Matador Films. But it's by Todd Harris, who's a Canadian filmmaker, Uninformed Consent. And that film actually takes people through what's been done to us by our government and our public health. And, you know, they're being dictated to, I believe, by the UN, the WEF, World Economic Forum, and the World Health Organization, the WHO. It's all coming down from top, and it's removing our national sovereignty. That's part of the plan.
Do you think people are waking up to the depopulation agenda that's been bragged about for years?
Yeah. You know, it's pretty hard for people to go there. That we've always thought that our government were and our doctors and our public health and that everyone's out to protect us and do good by us. But since when did the government ever not act in their own best interest, not in the interest of their population? And you know, the idea that this what is known as a kill shot or a clot shot by doctors and scientists, because there doesn't seem to be any other reason that it be rolled out around the globe in lockstep, except for to reduce the population. And we have heard that, of course, from Bill Gates and other people, that if we reduce the population, everything will be just fine. But the fact is that, you know, the population as it is and even growing would be just fine if we actually treated Mother Earth better. Now, I don't think there's an issue with climate change. I think this is what we're doing is we're the amount of pollution that we're getting is mostly coming from industry and also bad practices. I mean, by that I mean putting stuff up into the air with airplanes and so on is not only harmful to us, but it's harmful to vegetation as well. And so, if we're thinking of trying to feed a growing population, you can't do that. When you have, you know, acid rain and you have, you know, barium and sulfur and other materials, you know, dropped into the atmosphere regularly. People look up and they see those crisscrossing chemtrails. Those are chemtrails. It's been shown very clearly. So the problem is not coming from the little people. It's coming from higher up and their mismanagement of water, air, and food. And I think sometimes that mismanagement is intended to put people, the general population, in a position of crisis. When people are in crisis, they will do what is necessary. In other words, they'll sign on the dotted line to get food stamps from the people that control all the money. They control your bank account. They control your food. And people are willing to give up their rights and freedom just to survive. And I think that's actually what's going on here.
Christy Clark, John Horgan, Kevin Falcon have had or did have their own pages on the World Economic Forum website. Could BC be under the control of Klaus Schwab, pushing Agenda 2030, the Great Reset, where you own nothing but are happy about it?
I think absolutely. I mean, that would be my suspicion. I don't think these politicians are smart enough. And they also, the way they're rolling things out, it may seem a little up here and down there in our country, but generally it's all following the same trend, which is greater control of government and then handing over the government to the WHO. You know, the WHO, the WEF is everywhere. They talk about how 50% of the cabinet members are the ministers, the ministers in the prime minister's cabinet are your WEF members and controlled by the WEF. But if we look at the WHO, they're actually the most dangerous, I think, because what they're trying to do is to bring in under regulations that will hold every country accountable, because our government is just signing us away, signing all our rights away as a sovereign nation, that they will be able to declare a pandemic or concerns about a pandemic any time they wish. So if you have three children coughing in a daycare, they could call a pandemic for your country, and then they can step in with complete legal rights to tell you what you have to do. And that could be locking you down, destroying your business, increasing your risk of suicides, overdoses, all the things that occurred with the lockdowns which they brought in 2020. So the WHO is really the danger here. The WHO is just an arm of the United Nations, of course. So there's these people up there who are pulling strings. And I think they're pulling the strings of all our politicians. I think they're certainly telling them what to do, giving them scripts. The only way that you can coordinate something around the world like this is if you have some central operators. And the WHO and the WEF are definitely up there.
We'll have more with Dr. Malthaus right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Stephen Malthaus. Is Bill 36 likely to cause more BC healthcare professionals to move out of the province to places like Alberta or the U.S.?
Of course. Why wouldn't you? I mean, if the threat is that if you say one thing wrong, you contradict the state, in other words, the government dictates them what is good medicine, you do one thing like that and you have to pay a penalty of up to $200,000 per incident, and you could be stuck in jail. Who wouldn't consider, you know, either retiring early or leaving the province, going somewhere where it's more suitable for practicing medicine? Your hands will be completely tied. You will be an agent of the state. You will no longer be a real doctor. And this is what we can expect. Now, you know, Minister Dix has pretty much destroyed healthcare in the last 3 years with his policies. And I think, you know, now he wants more control over the regulation insights of healthcare professionals. And, you know, with that kind of sword hanging over your head, no one is going to be able to work under those conditions. To expect people to stay in the province, which is already, you know, that healthcare is crumbling here, would be unrealistic.
Do you think the healthcare professionals that refuse the experimental injections are waiting in the wings to save BC healthcare?
I don't think they will be able to save BC healthcare. I think the only thing that will save it will be if another form of healthcare is created alongside and people decide that that's a better place to be. Right now, our healthcare is like it's like a herd of buffalo heading for the cliff, and it would almost be impossible to turn it around. It's still being driven by people to go over the cliff, and they seem to be happy to seeing the population being destroyed. The only way out of this would be to create a parallel healthcare system which people could then jump ship or leave the herd and go to something which they identify as better. And, of course, that will have to be a much different healthcare system, one which is controlled from the bottom up, that gives power back to the patient so they can make informed decisions. So that means, and bringing in all the other sort of peripheralized or marginalized healthcare practices, and that would include traditional Chinese medicine, homeopathy, orthomolecular medicine, acupuncture. Everything needs to be brought in and seen as a possibility for treating patients in a better way. But the regulation and the way our college now is acting, that makes this healthcare we have in our province is doomed, in my opinion. I mean, we really, doctors are generally well-intentioned, but they have also been hoodwinked. We've been taught that vaccines are safe and effective, and they went along with that with the COVID-19 shot, which was not safe and effective. And the doctors that recognized that and were fired from their jobs if they were working in hospitals or province-regulated or province-run facilities, those doctors, there's not enough of them, I think, to turn this all around for healthcare, even if you invited them to come back to work. The same thing goes with, you know, the nursing staff and so forth. I don't think they want to go back into a situation which is abusive anyway. Why would they? I recommend that they focus on creating a better system which can parallel this one, and that people can then jump over into a new system before they go over the cliff with the old one.
In BC, the recent push has been for children to get the experimental injections. How's that going?
Not very well, I suppose, from the perspective of trying to get all these kids injected. The numbers I've heard is between 1 and 6% of children under the age of 5 are actually being taken for the shot. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. We know that, you know, children do not need, they don't get, if they get COVID, they don't have symptoms. 75% don't have symptoms, and they don't get sick. We don't even think there are really any true fatalities from COVID-19 under age 20, although they do have some numbers up, we've heard up to 25, but often they have comorbidities, which actually were the things that killed these children or young adults. So you don't need COVID shots. I mean, we never need them in the first place. But to actually allow them to be given to pregnant women and to infants down to 6 months of age is criminal. It's criminal and it's cruel. And because we're seeing an increase in miscarriages, spontaneous abortion, we're seeing adverse events in children and infants that should never have happened. And I think criminal is an understatement, really, for what's going on. This is inhuman, I think, that people could drive this, knowing what we know today, which we have not known for the last couple of years, that they don't need it because they're not at risk. It's not beneficial. The shots don't help in any way, and they're highly risky, particularly in age groups, which is, you know, young, I'd say young adults, where the risk of myocarditis and pericarditis is now probably 1 in 43, of which 50% of those kids don't know they have it. So they're the ones that go out on the playing field, and you know, they exert themselves. They get a reentry phenomenon in their heart. It causes an arrhythmia, such as ventricular tachycardia, which moves to ventricular fibrillation, and then they drop dead on the field. So we're seeing that in young adults and kids who never needed these shots to start with. So it's almost, there are no words to explain what would be in someone's mind or their intention when they allow this to be foisted upon our population.
Have you heard of possible remedies to remove the experimental injections?
Yes, I have, and there are several places that people can go to find that information. One is the Frontline Critical Care Consortium, the FLCCC, and also World Council for Health. They both have good pages on their website to give people some guidance if they've had a COVID-19 shot and have an injury from it or a suspected adverse event, then they can start treating themselves. They should, of course, bring in their family doctor as well. And, you know, but most family doctors have no clue as to what's going on. They're actually vaccine injury deniers. They think that the vaccines are still safe and effective, all of them, even ones which aren't vaccines, like the COVID-19 jab. And so they're essentially denying that it's coming from the shot. But, yes, there are websites that can give that information. In fact, our tour, which is the Justice for the Vaccinated Tour, we have a big black bus where we've been traveling all around B.C., Alberta, and most recently in Saskatchewan. We also talk about what people can do to treat themselves if they have COVID-19 shot adverse events. So how to start treating themselves to offset the injury. And many of them are very simple things that you can do at home. Even diet-wise, it's important. You can change your diet. You can increase vitamin D. You can increase your vitamin C levels. There are many different things you can do yourself. But we do think that if you have a medical issue, you do need to bring attention to your doctor, despite the fact that it is unlikely that your doctor will know anything about these adverse events and how to treat them.
What is the job of the College of Physicians and Surgeons?
Well, their job is to protect the public from doctors' misconduct or malpractice. That means the doctor has, his behavior has to be, he or her, she, their behavior has to be good and, you know, ethical. And they have to be able to practice to a standard. So their job essentially is to protect the public from doctors that don't meet those standards. And, of course, that's not what they've done. In fact, they've attempted to, I would say, I like the term lopped off, cut off heads to make themselves grow taller. I think it's a bit like that. They've actually, any doctor that has done their homework about the COVID-19 so-called pandemic, those are the ones that the college has gone after. In fact, they've declared it unethical to speak out. So the college has actually failed in their mandate, which is to protect the public from harm. And they're mostly focusing on trying to shut doctors up that are telling the public, hey, this is dangerous, don't do it, and here's the research. And as you know, our government has not presented any evidence to support any of the policies that they come out with. Essentially, they just say, well, the CDC said that, that's good enough for us, and then they roll out another shot for an infant or a young adult. So doctors that are saying, no, beware, the COVID policies are harmful. They're destroying people's livelihoods, the ability to put food on the table. Those doctors are being chased down, investigated, and punished because for them speaking out and trying to protect their patients. So the college has failed, but B36 brings in a worse scenario, because that brings in people who are completely non-compensamentous when it comes to health, and which is obvious as we've seen in the last 2 years in the deterioration of the healthcare in BC. And you know, to have them in place at the college would be even worse. But in fact, they both need to go. Our government needs to be changed, and our college needs to be changed as well.
We're hearing things are getting so bad, some paramedics are referring to ambulances as jab cabs. What are you hearing from paramedics?
Well, all people have to do is open the doors and listen to the number of ambulances they're hearing lately going down the street, and they'll get the picture. That after these jabs, we've had an increased mortality rate compared to previous years. There's no, by that I mean all-cause mortality has increased, and we're seeing everything from neurological to cardiovascular to immune system abnormalities. Yeah, there's no doubt that there's been an increase in deaths and injuries after the COVID-19 rollout. So the evidence is very clear. And, just listen to the number of ambulance sirens you hear going by every day. That'll give you an idea of what's really going on out there. And, you know, a lot of ambulances are sitting empty in places because the paramedics have been forced to get the jab. They themselves are getting sick. The ones that are left are overworked. And they just can't do overtime. Just like many professions, people are quitting because they just can't keep the pace up. The pressure is too great, and so that's why the paramedics in our ambulance services are having a difficult time.
What could happen to Canada's healthcare, law enforcement, and military after they've been forced to take the experimental injections or lose their jobs?
Well, I mean, just look at the defense of your country. If you take out, you know, 10% or 20% or 30% of your armed forces, not all dying, but them disabled or sick from their shots and the constant requirement for boosters, you're not going to be able to defend your country against an invader. And but you may not need to invade our country physically because you can do it psychologically, and you can control everything inside the country through the WHO, for example. The World Health Organization, they can do whatever they like, and Canadians will have to march to their orders. So that's one thing. But also we have the police force, reduced in its efficacy because of the COVID-19 shots and other policies, being forced to take action against their own citizens against their will. And of course, healthcare, we know that's crumbling on the basis of what the policies have been rolled out by public health. And pushed by our government.
Is it possible eugenicists and psychopaths have found their way into places of power?
It's possible. It's pretty hard to say, but when you look at what seems to be a culling of humanity, you kind of wonder why that would occur. Of course, eugenics has been around for a long time, and many of the people we know, I think Bill Gates' father was a self-professed eugenic proponent, And so that's quite possible that, you know, culling of the human race. We have had Bill Gates saying we need to reduce the population by, you know, 10 to 15%. And the way to do that is through vaccination programs. If I would give my personal opinion, I would say yes. The idea is to reduce certain parts of the population first. And I would say that the elderly need to, you know, they would say the elderly need to be taken out because, and those people that have Social Security, since Social Security is going to come to an end probably in about 2028, it's now being managed over in China for us in Canada, and that we'll be running out of money there. Of course, they can just print some more money, which is what they sort of do in the United States and in Canada if they feel they need a bit more for their friends. And so I think that eugenics is really a possibility here, and certainly there's some big agenda going on which is outside of healthcare. By that I mean that none of the things they've done make sense from a healthcare perspective. It's not improving the health of Canadians, but from the perspective of destroying the country and causing loss of lives, it's a great policy from the perspective of being very successful.
We've heard this winter could have a significant increase in deaths. What are you hearing?
Well, it would depend if you go get the jab or not. Your risk of getting having an increased death is there. Every winter there are deaths, and that's because, you know, we get cold and flu season, and that's pretty much happened every year. So we will see an increase in numbers. We are talking, let's talk a little about respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, in children. So we'd have to ask ourselves, are our hospitals actually being overloaded, or is it because we can't staff the beds, that those beds are essentially closed, that we have, beyond census at the hospital? The other one is, what is it like compared to previous years? Do we always have lots of kids in there with RSV? Do we always have kids in there with coughs and colds in the hospital? There is an absence of, or a deficient, we don't have Tylenol around, so it's hard for parents to control fever. I don't recommend Tylenol for fever anyway. Fever is a sign that the body's fighting back, and it's an indication of the state of health, and plus, fever can't be useful. Fevers that are really high, though, do need to be controlled, and Tylenol has been used for that. But if parents aren't able to disguise fever, which is what essentially Tylenol does, then they will be taking their children to the hospital, and then the hospital says, well, your child has a fever, we better keep them in overnight. So that could contribute to the increase in hospitalization for kids. The other one is, let's ask ourselves, how many of the hospitalized people have had the COVID shot? Right? Now, there's COVID-19. If we look at UK statistics, it actually has a negative effect in terms of infection, and we are seeing that people who are hospitalized have, the more boosters you get, the more likely you are to be hospitalized in Canada. We have the research to support that. So if we're thinking of why we have overflowing hospitals and what to do about it, it's not go get a booster. It's not go and get an RSV shot when it gets rolled out, by Pfizer or Moderna. It's to do the sensible things, eat well, take vitamin D during the winter, vitamin C all year round, good multivitamins, get some exercise, have some laughter in your home if you can, and hug your family.
How is the justice for the vaccinated tour going?
It's going remarkably well. We start out with Doctors on Tour, which was educate before you vaccinate, and we travel all around British Columbia. I think we went to how many towns? I think we were somewhere about 25 towns in that. That was three trips. And at that time, we were trying to tell people, don't give these shots to your kids because they're dangerous, they're not needed, and they don't work. But what we saw is over time that more people, once the COVID-19 vaccines, so-called vaccines, were rolled out, we started hearing more from people about vaccine injury. And we felt that the scrimmage line was changing now. Many people had wisely decided not to give these COVID-19 shots to their kids. And if they were being forced to do it to go to school or to play sports, if they just don't go to school, don't play sports, because these are so dangerous. I mean, you can't play sports if you're paralyzed from the waist down. So, but we saw that the scrimmage line was changing now. People were starting to ask us about what to do for the COVID-19 injury. And they were going to their doctors, and they were being told that, no, it's all in your head, and here's some antidepressants. And no one seemed to know what was going on, because the variety of injuries, adverse events coming after the COVID-19 shot, was so diverse that, doctors that were paying attention couldn't put it together. They couldn't figure out what was going on here, because we have everything from strokes to paralysis to blood clots, to myocarditis, heart attack, people having sudden blindness, deafness, people, dropping on the floor. sorts of things. So going to your doctor about the shots seems to be not such a useful thing, although we do think it is important. I'm going down a few lines here. Give me your question again, could you please?
You recently parked your Justice for the Vaccinated tour bus outside a mainstream media outlet. What happened?
Gotcha. Well, let me just go back to Peter's question. I know we're talking about the Justice for the Vaccinated tour. So we actually started the tour now going out telling people that these vaccine injuries are real. They're not all in your head, and that you need to go and report them, even though the Canadian system of reporting is pretty useless. You need to go forward and talk to your doctors and get some help, and there are also other places you can go to get help about it. We also need to speak to our government officials and let them know that we're not happy with what's going on. So, yeah, we had a hit piece that was done by the Castanet, which is a newspaper that comes out of Kelowna, well-read, actually, and which is sometimes surprising. But they did a hit piece about the Justice Vaccinated Tour, in which they actually had some misinformation in there regarding Dr. Charles Hoff and myself. About, you know, us being disciplined by the college, which is actually what has not happened. Dr. Hoff and I both having being investigated for speaking out against the COVID-19 policies, and also in my case for providing exemptions for the COVID-19 shot and for masks. But you know, the Castanet, we took our bus, which is a big bus with Justice for the Vaccinated on the side of it. And also there are signatures and pictures of people who've been injured. Their signatures are well wishes for people who have died from the shot or been injured. It's full of signatures from people. It's a bit like the Vax bus that they did after the film Vax came out. And we've been getting signatures from everybody all over the place. It's remarkable how many people have someone in their family who's been injured. We ask the audience, put up one hand if you know someone, personally know someone who has been injured by the COVID shot, either injured or died, and put up two hands if you know more than one person, like two or more people that have been injured or killed by the COVID-19 shot. And when we look at the audience, and we have this on film, there's a sea of hands. Most people putting up two hands, or two arms, raising them in the air, and it's like a forest of arms up in the sky, which is just telling how many people have either experienced themselves or know people who've had adverse events from these COVID-19 shots or been killed. Yeah, so that's what the bus is all about. So we went to the Castanet, and we asked them to come out and speak to us about their policy, what they've written in their article, and they refused to come and speak to us. They pulled down all the blinds on the first floor, and most of them disappeared to the second floor so as not have to be exposed to us. And we just really wanted to speak to them and maybe give them some information that might be useful in their future articles. At least they could get it right the next time.
Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel that isn't a train to put an end to what's being called a depopulation genocide by many?
Yes, I do see a light at the end of the tunnel here, because people are starting to wake up. And in fact, we've been asleep to the slow machinations of our government, WHO, WEF, UN, and our public health officials. We've been asleep to what they've been doing for the last 10 to 20 years, and they've been putting people into place. By that I mean people that will do as they're told from the upper echelons. They'll read their scripts, they'll do it on time, and you know, we've been asleep to that, and we've had this opportunity now because of the pressure we've been put under. It's a bit like you're running out of the house because it's on fire. But otherwise, you're just sitting in your house, you know, slowly catching on fire yourself. And because of what has been done to us, people are starting to wake up and recognize that the government is not on their side. Public health is not on their side. Certainly the UN and the WHO are not on their side. That they're actually trying to take away their power and ultimately seize control over us through things like what they've done to us in terms of these COVID shots. And public health policies, but also with regard to digital identification, you know, where everything is drawn through your cell phone or, some other recognition method, and giving over your power for your finance as well, and having a global digital currency where, just as you saw with the truckers, we all saw that, They could turn off your bank account with a flip of a switch if they think you're being naughty or not doing what you're told, or even thinking wrongly, because there's you know, if you're not watching the right TV program, you may find that you your car won't start, or that you're limited in what you can get at the grocery store. So yeah, there's light at the end of the tunnel because people are saying, I'm not going to do it anymore. They're actually standing up and saying, I'm just not going to do it. And the more people that do that, we have united non-compliance. And that's what's happening, and that's the way out of this. We're not going to be saved by any politician. We're not going to be saved by any public health person or any doctor. We have to save ourselves. And that is the way it's meant to be. We're meant to actually take back our own personal sovereignty and have some courage to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to do that. It's against the welfare of my family and myself and my community, and I'm just not going to do it. And just say no, and damn the consequences. So that's why I think there is light at the tunnel, because people are starting to do that. They're recognizing that we've been lulled into sleep for purposes of comfort and convenience, letting someone else do the job, and now it's time for us to take back our power.
What can people do to fight Bill 36, and where can they follow you on the Justice for the Vaccinated tour?
Well, I'll answer the first question, the second question first, which is where to follow the Justice of the Vaccinated tour. And you can also find all the videos, our talks and so forth, all the things we've done. And we have some extra tidbits in there because we try to have some fun on the bus. In fact, we're coming out with a song soon, which is called The 12 Lies of COVID, and people should stay tuned for that. But people can follow us on mycva.ca. That's mycva, which is the Canadian Voters Association. It's not really much to do about political as much as gathering people so that we can as a bloc tell organizations, companies, and politicians what we're happy with and what we're not happy with, and so on. Now, so that's what the best place to go to get it is mycva.ca. And they can see everything on that site. And they can follow the tour. And, in fact, tonight we'll be, we're going to be in Lethbridge, and then we'll be home for a bit, but we hope to come back out. We were at the Grey Cup just the other day, in fact, handing out pamphlets, telling people about the risks of myocarditis and pericarditis, in people that had the COVID-19 shot, and praying that no one in the Grey Cup would drop dead on the field. And they didn't, thank goodness. And, but also people whose children have had the COVID-19 shot, the risk of them increasing their heart rate and getting adrenaline pumping with exertion, and them having an arrhythmia and dropping on the field, that is a real risk for people who've taken their teens, or teens have been forced to get these COVID-19 shots to play hockey or to play football or soccer or something like that. So yeah, that's the tour, and we'll be back on next tour probably in the new year. We're not sure where we're going to go. We hope to go back to the prairies and hopefully into Ontario and then further east. The reception is excellent. We're getting a lot of people coming out. Hundreds of people come to our talks, and we also live stream them. People can see them. Also on Carrie Simpson's face page, Carrie spelled K-A-R-I, Simpson, as you would expect. On her Facebook page, you can go there and you can see the live streaming.
Stephen, thank you so much for being on the Goddard Report.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure, and I hope this information has been helpful to your listeners.
My guest has been Dr. Stephen Malthouse, president of the Canada Health Alliance, online at canadahealthalliance.org. I'm Jim Goddard.
Comments made on the Goddard Report and talkdigitalnetwork.com are an expression of opinion only. The Goddard Report is available online and mobile at talkdigitalnetwork.com. The Goddard Report is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.